Yung kaawit lamang natin kanina, yan po ay katha, both the words and the music were both by Martin Luther. And of course, Martin Luther ay isa sa kinasangkapan ng Panginoon. At itong month of October ay madalas natin gamitin bilang Reformation Month sa ating iglesia sapagkat ito'y pag-alala natin. On October 31, 1517, Martin Luther nailed yung tinatawag na 95 Theses bilang hamon sa debate dahil sa kumakalat na mga programa noon ng Roman Catholic Church sa indulgences. Yun daw pagpapalaya ng mga kaluluwa sa purgatorio sa pamamagitan ng mga special offering. Inilabanan ni Martin Luther yan at siya'y nagpako ng 95 Theses of Debate sa kanyang church door doon sa Wittenberg, Germany. At hindi niya akalain yung naging resulta noon, may mga nakabasa at ang ginawa nila, inilathala nila bago pa lamang technology noon yung printing press. Pero yun ang ginamit at kumalat, nilimbag sa buong Europa at yun ang naging simula ng tinatawag na Reformasyon. Ang epekto noon, hindi lamang religious, nagkaroon ng effect so social, political, and so many other aspects of society ay nabago ng dahil sa Reformasyon. Pero para sa atin, ang pinakamahalaga ng Reformasyon ay ibinalik tayo sa mga doktrina at pagtuturo ng salita ng Diyos. At ito'y kinakatawan ng mga tinatawag nating the solas of the Reformation. Sola Scriptura, Scriptures alone. Sola Fide, Faith alone. Sola Gratia, Grace alone. Yan ang mga bagay na tinangkilik at itinaguyod ng Reformasyon. So we are using the month of October para meron tayong alalahanin sa Reformasyon na maparangalan natin. Both the Reformation and the Reformers. Ngayon, maaaring magtanong kayo, well, why study the mistakes of the Reformation? Kung tayo'y nagpaparangal sa kanila at atin silang gustong parangalan, bakit yung kamalian nila ang pinag-aaralan natin ngayon? Well, precisely ang pinapakita natin dito, hindi tayo bulag sa kanilang mga kamalian. We are not blind followers of the Reformers or of the Reformation. At maging sila ay nagkamali, nagkaroon ng mga karupukan at tinitingnan natin ang mga yon para ipakita rito na kahit sila nagkaroon ng mga kamalian at karupukan, patuloy silang kinasangkapan ng Diyos. Hindi sila itinaboy nang dahil sa kanilang kamalian. At ganyan pa rin kumilos ang ating Diyos hanggang sa kapanahunan natin. We know our own frailty. We know we are but, as Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, vessels of clay. Mga tayo ay mga sisidlang putik lamang, subalit patuloy tayong kinakasangkapan ng Diyos. Ganun ang nangyari sa panahon ng Reformation at ng ating mga pinag-aaralang mga Reformers. Sila ay kinasangkapan ng Diyos sa kamila ng kanilang kamalian. Pero dapat naman tayong matuto sa kanilang mga kamalian. Yung mga nagkamali sila, huwag nating sundan at tayo patuloy na sumusunod lamang sa salita ng Diyos, hindi sa mga Reformers at sa kanilang mga tinindigan lamang. Tiningnan natin yung isa nung nakaraang linggo, yung kanilang mga conflicts, yung kanilang mga mga sigalot at pagkakahati, ito'y talagang nakapinsala sa Reformasyon. The Reformation, for all that it has accomplished and achieved, it could have accomplished more and achieved more if they were more united. Nakita natin ito sa nangyaring tinatawag na Marburg Colloquy. Nagsama sana yung kampo ni Martin Luther at ni Huldrych Zwingli nung sila'y nagkaroon ng konferensya sa Marburg, Germany. Pero nag-agree sila sa 14 na puntos. Nung makarating sila sa 15 na Lord's Supper, hindi sila nag-agree, naghiwalay. Isang napakalungkot na bagay yon, pero malaking pagkakamali. What more could the Reformation have achieved if they were united? At nakita rin natin sa Radical Reformation yung pag-uusig na ginawa sa kanila. Ngayon susundan natin yan ngayong umaga sa isa pang naging malaking pagkakamali ng Reformation. At ito yung isang bagay na masasabi natin ay itinuloy lamang nila yung naging struktura ng Roman Catholic Church. Tanda natin, the Reformers split up from the Roman Catholic Church. Pero nung sila ay humiwalay at naghati na, itinuloy nila yung strukturang naging nangyari doon sa Roman Catholic Church. At ano yung struktura na yon? Yan yung papel ng state. Pag sinabi nating state, tumutukoy yan sa pamahalaan, Ginamit nila yung kasangkapan ng pamahalaan para sa kanilang mga simulain. Pero tingnan natin yung background nito, paano nangyari ito. Well, sa Bagong Tipan, alam natin yung iglesia ng Bagong Tipan ay hiwalay sa Estado. Yung Estado noon, yung Roman Empire, hindi natin masasabi ng iglesia ng Bagong Tipan ay kasangga o katambal ng Estado. In fact, the church in the New Testament was a persecuted church. Inusig sila yung imperyo noon sa pamumuno ng nung panahon ni Pablo, si Nero, isa yan sa mga naging pinakamalupit na umusig sa mga Kristiyano. So the church was a persecuted church. It was not at all a partner of the state. Persecuted ang iglesia, hiwalay sa Estado. So paano nangyari ito? Well, nangyari ito sa isang mahalagang tao sa kasaysayan. Ito ay si Constantine. Si Constantine, anak ni Constantius na naging emperor ng Roma, pero nung panahon na yun ay hati ang imperyo sa East and West, at nung si Constantius ay namatay, ang pumalit ay si Constantine, at binigay ng mga kawal ni Constantius yung kanilang loyalty sa kanyang anak na si Constantine. Ang namumuno noon sa Roma ay si Maximius, at gusto ni Constantine na kunin yung kapangyarihan doon, sapagkat minana niya yun sa kanyang ama, dapat siya yung may hawak ng kapangyarihan sa Roma. Eh hindi naman ito basta ibibigay ni Maximius. So ang nangyari ay kumuha, tumipo ng army ng mga kawal itong si Constantine at nagmarcha patungo sa Roma. Pero mas malaki yung hukbo nitong si Maximius. Kaya habang nag-iisip ng plano itong si Constantine, may dalawang version ito. Yung isang version ay mula sa kasaysayan ni Lactantius, yung isa ay kasaysayan ni Eusebius. Mas popular yung kay Eusebius sapagkat mas popular siyang historian. Yung version ni Eusebius ay nagkaroon ng pangitain, vision, itong si Constantine. At sa kanyang pangitain ay may ipinakita sa kanyang simbolo ng cross. Now, yung cross na yon ay hindi yung cross na alam natin. Ito yung tinatawag na Constantine's cross. Ito yung pinagsamang letra ng Greek na chi. Ang katumbas niyan ay CH. At yung rho, so inilalagay yan dyan, ang katumbas niyan ay R. So yan ang tinatawag na Constantine's cross. At nakikita niyo yung simbolo na yan sa mga simbahan pa rin. Yan ang nakita niyang simbolo, at pagkatapos ay may salitang nagsabi sa Latin, in hoc signo vinces, by this sign conquer. Sa pamagitan ng sagisag na ito ay manakop ka. Yan ang kasaysayan ni Eusebius. So ang ginawa ni Constantine, lahat ng panangga o shield, kalasag ng mga sundalo niya, pinintahan ng senyales na yan, na iniugnay sa senyales o sa simbolo ng mga Kristiyano, kasi itong CH and R, chi and rho, were the first letters of Christus. At kilala na yan sa associated with Christianity. So pinintahan ni Constantine lahat ng shield ng kanyang mga sundalo ng ganitong symbol. And nagkaroon ng battle, kahit na sila mas kaunti sa hukbo ni Maximius, na naig sila sa tinatawag ng Battle of Milvian Bridge, 312 AD. So, nanaig sila, ang ibig sabihin noon, sumuko yung hukbo ni Maximius, at natural ang ibig sabihin ng kasunod noon, si Constantine na ang naupo sa trono ng Roma. Siya na ang emperador. At kanyang itinuring na utang na loob niya yung kanyang tagumpay sa pananampalatayang Kristiyano. Kaya ang isang mahalagang impluensya patungo sa pagtatambal ng Estado at ng Kristiyanismo ay itong makikita nyo ay put in quotation, yung conversion ni Constantine. Was he really converted? Yan ang patuloy na pinagtatalunan ng mga scholars ngayon. There are pros and cons on both sides. Ako medyo duda. Siyempre bilang Kristiyano gusto kong maniwala, pero kung titingnan niyo yung ibang mga ebidensya, yung kanyang pagpatay sa kanyang asawa at panganay na anak na naging banta sa kanyang trono, at iba pang mga masasabi nating cruelties, magbibigay ng pagdududa. Gayunpaman, yan ang nangyari. Dahil in tinuring ni Constantine utang na loob niya sa mga Kristiyano o sa pananampalatayang Kristiyano ang kanyang tagumpay, kaya agad-agaran, upon assuming the throne in Rome, year 313, ay yung katambal niyang emperador sa East, nagsama sila na binuo ang tinatawag na Edict of Milan. That's 313 AD. At sa Edict of Milan ay kanyang inilagay yung batas na kumikilala na sa pananampalatayang Kristiyano at sa iba pang mga pananampalataya. So ibig sabihin, ito yung unang-unang acknowledgement o unang-unang proclamation of religious liberty in history. Although hindi yan talaga total religious liberty, may mga conditions, but singled out among the faiths exercised then, ang siningle out niya yung pananampalatayang Kristiyano. Eh, galing sa emperador, malaking hudyat yan sa mga mamamayan na siningle out yung pananampalatayang Kristiyano. At pagkatapos niyan, itong si Constantine ay naging aktibo sa kanyang papel sa mga usaping pangsimbahan. Halimbawa, nung nagkaroon ng pagtatalo tungkol sa Trinidad ng si Arius ay nagpasimuno ng kanyang pagtuturo na laban sa Trinidad at kinakatalo siya ng ibang mga leader ng simbahan katulad ni Athanasius para matigil yung pagtatalo na yan. Si Constantine ang nagpatawag ng unang-unang konseho ng mga Kristiyano, yung tinatawag ng Council of Nicaea, year 325 AD. Mahalagang council yan sapagkat dyan na-define yung Trinity, yung papel ng Holy Spirit in relation to the Father and to the Son. So it's an important council, very important in history. But the point here is that for the first time, the state was the one calling issues of doctrine and in fact issues of discipline in the church. Kasi bukod sa issues of doctrine, nung maihayag na yung definition ng Council of Nicaea, isa sa mga panawagan nito ay disiplinahin itong si Arius. At anong ginawa ni Constantine? Pinatapo niya si Arius. So, church discipline naging state action. Arius was exiled. So, here is now a situation na hindi familiar ang church. Tandaan natin, from the New Testament, the church was separate from the state and even persecuted by it. But when Constantine assumed power at siya na yung naging aktibong papel, Christians who were once persecuted took the unfamiliar role of state sponsorship. Kumbaga, mula sa inuusig, napunta sa posisyon ng kapangyarihan itong simbahan. Kaya yung mga tagapanguna na ng mga simbahan ay kinukonsulta na, nagkakaroon na ng papel sa mga desisyon ng Estado. And so what happened? Well, from Christianity, dito na nangyari yung tinatawag na Christendom. Sa halip na isang konsepto, isang doktrina, isang paniniwala, Christianity, Christendom, it is now a territory. Umuugnay na sa isang lipunan, sa isang teritoryo, at ito ay kinakailangan tugunin at kinakailangan na bantayan, protektahan, alagaan ng Estado. So there is now the partnership of the state and the church. This is not the New Testament reality, but because of Constantine, yan ang nangyari. At mula kay Constantine, yan na ang naging struktura sa medieval age, yung panahon ng pagkatapos ng mga maagang siglo, yung Middle Ages na tinatawag, yan na ang naging struktura ng Roman Catholic Church. Huwag po nating isipin na yung Roman Catholic Church has always been there from the first century. Yan ang sasabihin nila, but that's not true from history. Yan ay gradual development. Yung talagang naging makapangyarihan ang obispo ng Roma ay nagsimula kay Boniface the Great of the 6th century. At dyan nagsimula yung tinatawag na kapangyarihan ng Roman Catholic Church. So mula dyan ay naging talagang makapangyarihan na ang Roman Catholic Church. Hindi lamang binabantayan siya ngayon ng Estado, humigit pa. ang simbahan na ang mas naging makapangyarihan kaysa sa Estado. Ito ay kanilang tinaguyod ng tinatawag na very popular doctrine on the two swords doctrine. Ano yung two swords na yan? Yung doktrina na may dalawang tabak. Ang tabak ng Estado at ang tabak ng pananampalatayang Kristiyano, tabak ng Iglesia. Alam niyo ba kung saan kinuha yung two swords na yan? Ay nakakatawa sana pero talagang nakalulungkot sapagkat yan ang epekto ng tinatawag na allegorical hermeneutics. Yung uri ng interpretasyon na gumagawa ng mga iba't ibang mga antas ng paniniwala. Kinuha yan sa Luke 22. Tingnan nyo kung saan ang pinagkunan. At kayo magpasya kung kayo'y tatawa o iiyak. Luke 22 verse 37, I say to you that this which is written must still be accomplished in me. And it was numbered with the transgressors for the things concerning me have an end. Then they said, verse 38, Lord, look, here are two swords. And he said to them, it is enough. Yun ang pinagkunan. Yun daw, two swords ay sword of the state and sword of the church. Now tayo, tingnan natin, where in the world did you get it? Pero yung panahong yun, allegorical ang approach sa scripture, they took it seriously. Na yung mas malalim daw nakahulugan nung dalawang tabak na yon ay tabak ng Estado at tabak ng Iglesia. Pero sa dalawang tabak, mas makapangyarihan ang Iglesia. At talagang pinairal nila yan, lalo pa nung kapanahunan nung sa French ay Charlemagne, Carlos Magnus, Charles the Great, ay talagang kinilala niya ang pagkakataas ng simbahan sa kanya. At nung mga sumunod pang mga kasaysayan, ang isang kagagawa ng simbahan ay naging taga-usig. Kaya makikita nyo the complete reversal from the persecuted church of the New Testament, yung silang inuusig ng Estado, nung sila ay nakipagtambala na sa Estado at naging mas makapangyarihan pa sa Estado, ang simbahan ang naging taga-usig ng mga heretics, ng mga tinuturing nilang false teachers o anumang maling katuruan. Binanggit ko sa inyo last week sa isang illustration, ang isang pinakabantog na pangyayari dito ay si Galileo. Galileo published a book detailing his experiments and among others, yung kanyang itinuro doon ay hindi ang mundo ang sentro ng solar system. It's based on telescopic data. Wala namang teleskopyo pang talagang well-developed noon. Pero si Galileo, nakapag-develop siya. At sa kanyang nakikita talaga, based on physical evidences, ginawa niya yung data niya na the Earth is not the center of the solar system. Sa doktrina ng simbahan, yan ay heresy. So, Galileo was put on trial. Yan trial na yan, yung tinatawag sa simbahan na Inquisition, may kapangyarihan silang litisin ang sino mang inaakala nilang heretic o nagtuturo ng mali. At si Galileo nilitis at sinabi na mali ang iyong tinuturo, and on threat of death, Galileo had to recant. And Galileo recanted. So, naglathala siya na hindi totoo at pumapayag siya. Sumasang-ayon siya na ang mundo ang sentro ng solar system. So, here is the blind ignorance of the church versus the data of the telescope, and the data of the telescope had to give way to ignorance because of the state, because the church was bearing the sword. Gumamit ng tabak ang Iglesia para sa kanyang kabulagan, sa yung simbahang Katoliko para sa kanyang kabulagan ay itinaguyod. Kaya si Galileo, he was spared his life, but for all his life he was under house arrest. Baka kumalat pa yung kanyang itinuturo. Pero isang halimbawa lang yan. Ngayon, anong nangyari sa Reformasyon? Tandaan natin, most of the reformers were either Catholic priests or leaders. At kung sila ay magreforma, humiwalay sila sa simbahan, pero kung saan sila napadpad na makapangyarihan, na naging makapangyarihan, itinuloy nila yung struktura. They perpetuated the structure that began with Constantine and perpetrated by the church. So yan ang nangyaring kamalian ng Reformasyon. Where the reformers became ascendant, they perpetuated this medieval structure. Gagamit ako ng tatlong halimbawa lamang. Marami pang magagamit, pero tatlong halimbawa kung paano ito naging malaking kamalian. First is in the case of Martin Luther and the so-called Peasants' Revolt. The Peasants' Revolt of 1524 and 25. Nung nangangaral na itong si Martin Luther, syempre very liberating yung kanyang pangangaral. And anyone who listens to the gospel, tandaan nyo, yung dark ages, bawal ka magbasa ng Biblia, bawal ang ganito, bawal ang napakaraming bawal, at laging nandyan yung banta ng simbahan. Now, for the first time, you're hearing the gospel, you're hearing the liberating truths of redemption, and so, marami ang talagang yung effect sa kanila, liberating not only in the spiritual sense, but also in the social sense. Nakita nila yung pagkakaisa, pagkakapantay-pantay ng lahat. And so one effect was that the peasants, yung mga may hirap noon na pumapailalim sa mga prinsipe, tandaan natin hindi pa ito mga nation states na kagaya ngayon. Pag sinabi mong Germany, wag mong isipin na Germany yan ng katulad ngayon na isang bansa. Yung Germany noon ay nahahati-hati sa iba-ibang mga katumbas ng mga probinsya na may nagaharing prinsipe. Ngayon, yung mga peasants, nakakasumpong na sila ng kanilang kalayaan, nagdemand sila ng more concessions. Hindi sila pwedeng basta na lamang manilbihan ng walang kaangkop na kabayaran and other concessions. Yun ang gusto niya. Ayaw ng mga namamahala yun. So nagkaroon ng tensyon at nagkaroon ng pag-aalsa ng mga peasants, ng mga mahihirap. Now, initially, Martin Luther sought a mediating position. So nagsikap siya na maging tagapagpamagitan sa pagitan ng mga namamahala at ng mga maralita, ng mga peasants. So pumagitna siya. And he tried to be a spokesman to the powers on behalf of the peasants. He tried to speak for the powers to the peasants. Dahil kung isipin nyo, at this point, Martin Luther was the celebrity. He was looked up to. And the peasants were expecting him to take their sides. Well, initially, sympathetic si Martin Luther. But then, the peasants began to do some excessive violent activities. Destroying chapels, etc. And Martin Luther, the eccentric personality that he was, nag-move siya to the other extreme. He went against the peasants, but not only that, he called on the authorities to slaughter the peasants, and the word he used is without mercy. That's Martin Luther. So, yun ang ginawa ng mga authorities. And since they have the armies, madaling nasupil. Itong mga peasants, they're untrained. They don't have the armies, they did not have the weapons. Kaya in just a year, nasupil itong mga peasants. But the resulting aftermath was disillusionment on both sides. So Martin Luther initially tried to be mediating, and then later on, pumanig siya sa authorities. But the end result was disillusionment on both sides. Which means that the peasants disillusioned sa Protestant cause, and also the authorities became suspicious what the Protestant message can engender. Anong magagawa ng Protestant message? Baka mag-alsa na naman. So the end result was damage on both sides. Walang fruit dito on either side. And also since that time, Lutheranism came under tight control of the state powers. Kaya unique among the reformers, Martin Luther took the position that when it comes to church discipline, the state must enforce it. Hindi ganyan ang magiging pananaw later, but Lutheranism to this day has the position na the state enforces church discipline. So yan ang malungkot na nangyari because of Martin Luther and the Peasants' Revolt. Ngayon, punta tayo sa ikalawa na kaso. This time, John Calvin and the Servetus Affair. Sino itong si Servetus? Michael Servetus was a heretic. No doubt about that. Yung kanyang teaching is anti-Trinitarian and so many other fundamental doctrines ang kanyang ginagawang liko, yung kanyang pangangaral. And not only that, Servetus was a fugitive, hindi lang sa isang bansa, kundi sa maraming bansa ng Europa, he was a wanted man. So, patago siya. Pero narinig niya yung nangyayari sa Geneva under John Calvin, and so he was hoping for some leniency on the part of Geneva. Kaya isang araw, habang nangangaral itong si John Calvin sa kanyang simbahan, isa sa mga umatend ay si Servetus. Well, he was recognized by some people, and the authorities were alerted, and after the service, Servetus was arrested. Now, tandaan natin yung posisyon dito ni John Calvin. Dito marami nagkakamali. John Calvin was not part of the government of Geneva. Siya ay preacher, siya ay pastor ng isang church doon. But there were other three churches of the Reformation conviction in Geneva. And John Calvin was just one of them, although, let's say, the most influential one. At yung kanyang mga pangangaral, syempre ay malaking impluensya. But he was not part of the decision-making authorities. Kaya nung nagdesisyon ang authorities na si Servetus ay parusahan ng pagpatay, capital punishment, first, Calvin appealed. Wag na lang. Hindi pumayag yung authorities ng Geneva dahil syempre iniisip nila yung magiging relasyon nila sa ibang mga siyudad, ibang mga teritoryo. At yun ang naging kanilang desisyon. You can say it's a political decision. So the next thing, John Calvin appealed for a more merciful kind of death. Well, that too was not really granted. But you will see that John Calvin had some role to play, but not the key role to play in the Servetus affair. So there are two things to say here. First, yes, John Calvin was still thinking under the mentality of the Reformation mistake, na ang state ang nag-enforce ng mga bagay na may kinalaman sa simbahan. This is heresy. It should be a matter of church discipline, not a matter of state execution. Pero John Calvin was wrong. Pero on the other hand, the second thing is, let's be fair. Napakaraming nagawa ni John Calvin na napakagagandang bagay na hanggang ngayon ramdam yung benefits nito. And yet for this one mistake, you will read so many writings na grabe ang pag-criticize kay John Calvin as though this one mistake has totally undone everything that he has done, which is very unfair. So this is a mistake, yet he was not the key role in this affair, but it happened. In fact, what was isolated in Geneva, ito lang ang nangyari sa Geneva, it became more rampant in other Protestant states. The victims, the worst victims, as we saw last week, were the radical reformers and independent Baptists. Ang mga Baptists, nung panahon na ang reformers ay inuusig, magkapanalig sila. Nung ang mga reformers ay naluklok sa kapangyarihan, tumatakbo na sila. Dahil hinahabol na sila ng reformers. So, ganun ang karanasan ng mga Baptists noon. Now, finally, here is another instance of the other effect where state and church become partners. Yung unang nakita natin, yung masyadong kapangyarihan ng church. Well, dito, sa third case, is the other way around. This is the case of Thomas Cranmer and his compromise. Thomas Cranmer was the leader of the English Reformation, meaning yung Reformation sa England. Siya yung leader nito. But for the most part of his career, he simply followed the wishes of King Henry VIII. So King Henry VIII wanted a divorce from Catherine of Aragon because he wanted to be married to Anne Boleyn. Anne Boleyn is how it's pronounced. So Anne Boleyn, Pero ayaw pumayag ng Papa. Because Catherine of Aragon was from Spain. And Spain is a very important ally of Rome. So makikita niyo mga politika rin ito. So the Roman Pope, the Vatican, would not agree to a divorce. So anong ginawa ni King Henry VIII? Pinilit itong si Thomas Cranmer na bumuo ng isang proclamation na titiwalag ang simbahan ng England from Rome. And it happened in 1534, ay tumiwalag ang simbahan ng England from Rome. Yan ang tinatawag natin ngayon, Church of England. At hindi ito doctrinal issue. In fact, King Henry VIII remained Catholic in his belief. Pero para ma-divorce yung kanyang Catherine of Aragon at mapangasawa si Anne Boleyn, ito ang nangyari. Well, of course, later on, magsasawa siya kay Anne Boleyn, and Anne Boleyn herself will be beheaded by King Henry VIII, and he would have more wives after. Pero itong si Thomas Cranmer, naging sunod-sunuran. Yet he was supposed to be a reformer. Pero dahil nagsunod-sunuran siya sa estado, sige lang ng sige hanggang sa dumating na it became, nung mamatay na si King Henry VIII at ang pumalit ay Mary, Queen Mary, in history, Bloody Mary. Pinag-recant itong si Thomas Cranmer. Itong si Mary, gusto niyang bumalik sa Roman Catholic Church, ang England. Pinagre-recant niya itong si Thomas Cranmer. Anong ginawa ni Thomas Cranmer? Pumirma ng recantation. At nung pumirma na, yet tinuloy pa rin ni Mary na siya i-execute. Hiyang-hiya itong si Thomas Cranmer sa sarili niya. And for the first time, he showed courage at the stake. When he was going to be burned, his request was to have his hand first burned. The hand that signed the recantation, he wanted it first to be burned because he was so ashamed of himself. But the damage has been done. Pero ito ang punto na kapag pinagsama mo ang estado at ang simbahan, walang mabuting mangyayari either on the state or on the church, because that is not what Jesus designed for the church. Bowing to the authority of the state in religious matters damages the message. At ito rin ang nangyayari kapag ang simbahan ngayon ay tumitingin sa estado para sa kanyang mensahe. Ito ang nakalulungkot. It's happening now when evangelicals are looking to the state for the cause of Christianity. Kapag ang mga evangelicals nag-aakala na sa pagiging presidente ng isang evangelical, ito ang makakatulong sa evangelical cause. This has been tried before and it has failed miserably. And we should never wed together the church and the state. The state is a common grace of God and it is a blessing. At kung meron tayong magandang state, napakabuti niyan sa lipunan. Pero ang estado ay hindi binigay ng Diyos para isulong ang simulain ng iglesia. At ang iglesia dapat niyang isulong yung kanyang mensahe at simulain sa sarili niyang mga ibinigay ng Diyos sa kanya, hindi sa paraan ng kapangyarihan ng estado. And it would take Baptists in America to rediscover the New Testament doctrine of the separation of church and state. And it was in America that Baptists were first appealed. Sila nung gumagawa na ng konstitusyon ang America noon bilang bagong laya sa Inglaterra, inisip nila na kagaya ng Inglaterra at ng iba pang bansang Europa, magkaroon din tayo ng state church. And the most influential then were Baptists. So sila'y kumonsulta sa mga Baptists na sila'y maging state church. And it was the Baptists, represented by Isaac Bacchus, who made the position that the church should be separate from the state. At sa Constitution ng Amerika, yan ay inilathala sa kanilang unang-unang amendment that Congress shall not pass any law respecting any religion. There should be separation of church and state. Nang si Pilato ay kaharap si Jesus, At sinabi ni Pilato sa kanya, kung ikaw ay may kaharian, nasa ng iyong kaharian? At anong sagot ni Jesus sa kanya? John 18:36, "My kingdom is not of this world. For if my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would have fought. But then my kingdom is not of this world." Anong ibig niyang sabihin? Yung kanyang kaharian na itinataguyod ang iglesia ay hindi makamundo. Kaya hindi gagamit ng makamundong mga pamamaraan. Hindi para sa atin ang sandata. Hindi para sa atin ang mga political means. And it is something that saddens me every time Christians speak of political methods to advance the Christian cause. Kapag narinig mo yung prayer rally, ay manalangin ka na lang, pero wag mong gawing rally ang prayer. Pag narinig mo yung mga marches na ginagawa ng mga Kristiyano, o makarinig ka ng mga kandidatong Kristiyano para sa na kandidato ng mga iglesia, this is going back to what has been tried for so many centuries and have failed miserably. No, the church is not a partner of the state. The church is separate from the state. And this is a reformation mistake that we should not repeat. Sadly, it is being repeated again, and we must fight against this mistake once more. Religious conviction is a matter of persuasion of conscience and not coercion. Any question? Nikaya.
Pastor, ano po, palagi kami nai-discuss ni Papa pag nagkaroon kasi ako ng subject about ethics sa school. We're talking about scientific developments na like yung embryonic stem cell research, therapeutic cloning, mga developments na pag inanalyze mo ay hindi very Christian. Tapos we were discussing about some politicians na claiming to be Christians pero they vote for it, or they help in passing the bill for the advancement of these developments. Sabi ni Pap, parang Papa said something like, kasi dahil nga daw sa separation of church and state. Pero iniisip ko naman, hindi ba mali din yun? Kasi it's a morality din po yun, di ba? So hindi din dapat i-compromise yun. Hindi mo pwedeng sabihin na, ah, dahil this is about the state, this is not about the church, so ihihiwalay mo na ba yung iyong conviction tungkol sa ganon?
Okay, it's a good question. Una dun sa scientific research, definitely Christians are not against scientific research. On the contrary, it was by Christian conviction that scientific research was promoted and science had its due place. Eh dahil sa paniniwala nga ng Kristiyano na ang lahat ng ito ay likha ng Diyos, dapat nating saliksikin ang lahat, kasuluk-sulukan, kaduluduluhan ng likha ng Diyos. So when Johann Kepler discovered a very complex laws of planetary motion, eh ang kanyang sinabi ay, "I am thinking God's thoughts after him." So Christianity is not against scientific research. Let us promote it for as long as it is really and genuine. It is real and genuine science. Now, concerning ethics and the passing of laws, of course, lalabanan natin yung mga batas na laban sa moralidad. For example, abortion, which is to us as Christians, the killing of a human life in the womb, lalabanan natin ang mga yun. Pero may mga Kristiyano naman halimbawa sa Amerika na nagpipilit na trabaho ng Estado ang magpasa ng mga batas gaya ng magkaroon ng pananalangin sa mga paaralan, prayers in school. May mga Kristiyanong nagkampanya sa US Congress na nilabanan din ng ibang mga Kristiyano, and I agree with them na hindi para sa Kongreso magpasa ng mga may kinalaman sa panambahan, panalangin, Biblia. So I'm against, for example, the government establishing a Bible Week. Sa atin, magandang pakinggan. But the principle is, it's not for government to pass those laws. The government should not pass laws about any religion at all, including evangelical religion. But we will be against laws or proposed laws that are anti-morality. But we will also be against passing of laws that has to do with Christian worship and Christian convictions. So both ways yan. Lalabanan natin yung immoral laws, pero huwag tayo magpasa ng law na pang-Kristiyano. Jean.
Pastor, dun sa medieval structure, merong ang church has power over the state. Dun sa case ni Martin Luther and the peasants, parang inisip ko lang, why did he side with the state? Kung ang church ang may power over the state, ano yung mga peasants? Where did they belong? Didn't they belong dun sa... they are the church in a way, yung mga peasants. So, but in this case, reverse yung structure. Nagkaroon ng power yung state over the church. Hindi po ba ganun yung nangyari
doon? Yes, in a way. Remember, yung time ni Martin Luther, the Lutheran church or the church that Martin Luther represented did not have the power of the Roman Catholic Church over the state. Yung sinasabi natin the church had power over the state is the Roman Catholic Church, not the Protestant Church. Yung Protestant Church, sa case ni Martin Luther, was still under the state, although a partner of the state, but not having power over the state. Kaya nung nagkaroon na ng violence, now, totoo naman na talagang naging excessive yung violence nung ilang mga ginawa ng mga peasants. But si Martin Luther talaga, he's against violence. And so he sided with the princes, yung mga prinsipe ng mga teritoryo to suppress the peasants. Pero not as one that had power over the state.
Bakit ganun ang naging position ni Luther? Was it because of the influence of the Catholics?
No, because he was anti-violence. He was against the violence that the peasants were perpetrating. And sa tingin niya, kailangan pigilin ito. And Martin Luther is of a type of personality that you do not sense moderation. Kapag gumawa siya ng posisyon, yung extreme lagi. Kaya yun nangyari nga sa Marburg Colloquy na nakita natin last Sunday. There could have been moderation. Pero para kay Martin Luther, it's almost always either or. So nung gumawa siya ng posisyon regarding the peasants, well, pwede niyang sabihin, restrain them, maximum tolerance. Hindi ganun sinabi niya. Slaughter them without mercy. So he's wrong. Definitely wrong. But does that mean we no longer recognize what Martin Luther has accomplished because of his mistakes? I will not take that position. In other words, I will not be a Martin Luther in assessing Martin Luther. Tito Ike.
This is in connection with the present situation now as compared to the history wherein the church and the state was combined before. Now, there is already a separation of church and state. Now, ito ba ay hindi kaya lead to the proliferation? When we say church and state, we are talking here about Christianity and we do not talk about Islam, the Jews, etc. But now, the Christian religion nagkaroon because of, I would say, dahil sa paghiwalay ng state at the church, nagkaroon ng andaming branches, religions. Ito lang sa Baptist, dito lang sa Los Baños. I have issued certification for tatlo dyan sa Makiling Baptist community sa Naturesville Baptist Church, Bible Baptist Church, isa rin sa Rudas. Ito kaya, hindi kaya yung paghihiwalay ng state at saka religion, at saka religion ay it lead to the proliferation of so many religions under Christianity and sometimes marami at nag-aaway pa. Is it not? For purposes of national peace, hindi kaya mas maganda kung there is harmony between state and religion. Kasi gayon ay I have read a book which says that one cause ang isang hidwaan ay yung dami ng religion. What would you comment on this, Pastor?
Salamat po. Well, unang-una, yung pagdami ng mga reliyon dahil sa paghihiwalay ng simbahan at ng Estado, I would prefer free proliferation than imposed uniformity. In other words, yung sinasabi na pagsamahin mong Estado at simbahan, kahit isang simbahan lamang, that may sound harmonious, but in reality, it's slavery. And that's what happened in the medieval age. That's what happened to us even here in the Philippines. And I would rather have the freedom of proliferation na nagparami-rami dahil sa kalayaan kesa yung nag-iisa ng dahil sa pagkaalipin. So, I welcome proliferation. Well, what about the disharmony? Well, for as long as that disharmony is addressed by persuasion, meaning let's persuade, let's try to convince each other. In other words, let it be a battlefield of ideas. I have no problem with that. The problem begins when one or several of them is given the sword. That's where I'll be afraid of. And that's what's happening with terrorism. When a religion begins to impose its ideas by way of a sword, by way of bombs, that's terrorism. And we don't want that. I have no problem with trying to convince and persuade one another in a marketplace of ideas. I'm not afraid of that because I believe that the Christian gospel is going to be more persuasive, but for as long as it is a battlefield of persuasion. And not a battlefield where one of the contenders has a sword. Other questions? Any other thought? Sige po.
Okay. Follow-up question on this. Na kung minsan, yung hindi dapat, ang religion niya ay hindi dapat humiwalay o makialam sa affair of the state. I think this is easier said than done because as of now, the RH bill still pending in Congress, which some religions says gusto nila na maipasa. But the Catholic Church is against this, which is, according to statistics, about 80% of the Filipinos are Catholics. And itong mga politiko natin ay natatakot na ipasa itong kwan, baka ito ay magkaroon ng repercussion sa during election. So in short, dito pa rin ay nakikialam pa rin ang religion.
Totoo po yun. The so-called separation of church and state in our country is more on paper and theory and constitution rather than practice. Sa practice natin, malaki pa rin ang pakialam ng simbahan at yung mga politiko, yung kanilang mga desisyon ay kailangan pa rin ng bendisyon ng simbahan, which is wrong. In America, this is more practiced, yung talagang may separation of church and state. Now, it doesn't mean that the leader of the country cannot use Christian counsel or even Christian prayer. Pero pansinin niyo yung pagkakaiba. When Obama was proclaimed, yung inaugurated, decision niya kung sino yung magpe-pray sa kanyang inauguration. It happened to be Rick Warren, who by the way gave a very good prayer. I liked his prayer doon sa inauguration. But that was his decision because yun ang expression ng kanyang faith. Dito lang mangyayari sa bayan natin na sa pagbubukas ng Kongreso, inaugurasyon ng presidente, 5-6 ang sabay-sabay na mananalangin ng iba't ibang mga reliyon na nagtatalo-talo ang mga yan, pero magsasama-sama sa isang inaugurasyon, sa isang pagbubukas ng Kongreso, which is to me all hypocritical. Mananalangin sila na hindi naman sila nag-a-agree sa isa't isa. Maaring tumatawag sila sa ibang Diyos. I would rather that whoever the president is at magkakaroon ng ceremony, choice niya kung sino yung mag-pray according to his or her faith. I have no problem with that. But yung ginagawa ngayon na para lang ma-please lahat. So meron kang Katoliko rito, meron kang Aglipayan, meron kang Muslim, meron kang Iglesia. It's just so weird and hypocritical. Any other point? Pero yung bantayan natin ay yung tinataguyod ngayon na kailangan natin ng kandidatong evangelical at siyang dapat na makapunta sa Malacañang. Mga kapatid, yung kapangyarihan ng iglesia ay wala sa Malacañang. I would vote for a president who I believe to be competent, just, and has the record to show for it. I won't tell you who at this point, but I'm not going to vote because the person is a Christian. I'm going to vote because the person will be a good leader, not because he's a Christian. So sana ganun din ang maging desisyon nyo. Kaya sino man ang magpresenta ng kanyang sarili at ang ginagamit ay yung kanyang pagiging Kristiyano, wag nating gawing ang desisyon natin ay batay rin. Any other point?
Tungkol dito sa pagpili ng ating mga leaders, would you comment ng isang religion na sabi nila there is unity among them, na kung ano ang sasabihin ng kanilang pastor ay iyan ang ibubuto.
Eh, yan nga po ang isang panghihimasok ng simbahan sa usaping pangpolitika. Kapag ang leader ang nagpapasya, eh, ito'y balik sa pagkaalipin. You are giving your conscience to the leader's choice. And I know yung church na gumagawa niyan at yung ibang nagpa-practice niyan. We don't do that here. If someone comes to me and asks for my opinion, I'm willing to give it, but there is no imposition here of who to vote for. We respect each other's opinion. My candidate does not need to be your candidate. I choose my candidate on the basis of my preference, on the basis of my convictions, and I will not impose on your preference or conviction. John.
Sir, medyo na-confuse ako dun sa nangyari kay Calvin. O, ano ba talaga yung dapat naging stand niya nung time na yun? Yung view ni Calvin nung time kay Servetus, should he have just... Kasi di ba fugitive si Servetus nun? Didn't he deserve the death penalty anyway?
No. Unang-una, Servetus did not deserve the death penalty. He deserved to be disciplined. So, no... problem, no question about his heresy. Yung kanyang mga pinublish na mga pagtuturo are heretical, and therefore he deserved discipline by whatever church he belonged to. He did not deserve the death penalty. Then the next answer is that John Calvin was acting under his mentality then, which was the mentality of most of the reformers, that the state had the power and duty to enforce the discipline of the church. And on that, Calvin was wrong. And kaya nga isinama natin ito sa mistake. He was mistaken, deadly mistaken. And yet, to be fair, he did not have the decision-making power in Geneva. Contrary to the opinion of many, he did not. He was just a pastor, preacher sa kanyang simbahan, a very influential one, but not the decision-making power. And nagdesisyon yung panel, yung mga leaders ng Geneva, that Servetus had to be executed in compliance with what the other European powers wanted. So yun ang nangyari. Calvin tried to mediate. Una, mediate na wag na lang. Nung hindi mangyayari, he tried to mediate na a merciful death, which he thought was by sword. Hindi rin nangyari, hindi rin siya pinagbigyan. So ultimately, Servetus was burned at the stake. Follow up? Sige.
Wala talagang ginawa si Servetus na criminal act.
No, wala.
So ang pagka-fugitive niya was just because he was a heretic.
Yes. Pero remember, yung mga European states noon, yung mga European cities were operating by the so-called sacral concepts of society. Ibig sabihin niyan, society is defined by your religion. Kaya kapag anti-religion ka ng society na yon, you are an enemy of the state. So yun ang mentality nila. Again, sa atin, mali yan na nagbe-benefit tayo, nakikinabang tayo ngayon, at siguro hindi natin masyadong na-appreciate ito, nakikinabang tayo ngayon sa pinanindigan ng mga Baptist sa Amerika na sinundan ng buong mundo, halos ng buong mundo na ngayon, nakikinabang tayo sa kanilang pinanindigan na ang lipunan hindi dapat i-define ng religion, which is the correct one. But prior to that, everybody thought that way, that in order for society to be safe, you must have one religion. If you attack that religion, you are attacking the state. So you are an enemy of the state if you're a heretic. So yun ang kanilang mentality. We are putting that under Reformation mistake. So we should not repeat that. We should appreciate the freedom that we now have. And yet, at the same time, gaya nung sinabi ko, the Lord still used them for all their mistakes. We give glory to the gracious God. But at the same time, ang matutuhan nating leksyon ngayon, ang sinabi ng Zechariah chapter 4, it is not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord. And that is the power of the church, the Holy Spirit, and not politics. Let's close in prayer. Magpapasalamat kami, dakila naming Diyos, sa mga natutuhan namin, maging sa kamalian na pinag-aralan namin mula sa Reformasyon. Ay nakita namin ang katotohanan na ang kapangyarihan ng Iglesia ay hindi nakabatay sa kapangyarihan ng Estado. Napakalaking pagkakamali ang nangyari sa mga nakalipas. Ngunit nagpapasalamat kami na nasa panig kami ngayon, na nakikinabang kami sa pinanindigan ng aming mga ninunong Baptist, kung saan sila ay nanindigan sa kalayaan ng simbahan mula sa panghihimasok ng Estado. At gayon din, ang simbahan ay hindi dapat manghimasok sa mga usaping pang-estado na sa aming lipunan ay malimit pa rin na siyang kaganapan. At ngayong ang mga evangelicals na kapatid namin ay natutukso at nabibighani sa kapangyarihang pang-estado, at ngayon ay nagsisikap mangampanya para sa kapangyarihang iyon na gamit ang mga pamamaraang politika para sa Iglesia, nakalulungkot ito. Ngunit naway magkaroon ng pagkagising ang mga kapatiran namin na wala sa pamamaraang politikal ang pagsusulong ng simulaing Kristiyano. Tulungan mo kami bilang Iglesia na hanapin namin ang kapangyarihan ng aming simulain at ng aming misyon, hindi sa politika, hindi sa mga pamamaraang pampolitika, kundi hanapin namin ito sa banal na Espiritu lamang na isinugo mo nang dahil sa ginawa ng aming Panginoong Hesukristo. Kaya't ibinabalik namin ang lahat ng kapurihan sa iyo, ikaw na Diyos, na sa kabila ng kanilang karupukan ay ginamit mo pa rin ang mga reformers. Sa iyo kami umaasa na patuloy mo kaming gamitin, na natutunan na namin ang kanilang mga kamalian at iwinawasto namin. Patuloy mo kaming kasangkapanin sa aming kapanahunan. Sa pangalan ng Panginoong Hesukristo, ito ang aming panalangin. Amen.